Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, with my co-host, super endocrinologist, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr. Today, we got a special guest in here, Dr. Karen Norden. She's a behavioral change specialist, Body Brain Alliance. She runs that, has a really successful business, and she specializes in getting people to do evidence-based practices to do behaviors that are good for you. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Norden.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So how'd you get into this? I was reading a little bit on your website about how you got into behavior change, but I have patients and followers that are like, you got to talk to Dr. Norden. I was like, all right, she seems cool.
Yeah. So I was a person who struggled with behavior change from a very young age. I tell the story about being in third grade and seeing this girl named Valerie Carlson in my class. And Valerie had her like organized pencil case and she had all of her homework. And I have like missing assignments out the wazoo. I have pencil shavings on everything. And I vowed to myself in that moment, I was like, I am going to learn to be more organized. And that became, I'm going to learn to be healthier. I'm going to learn to exercise consistently. All of these things, years and years and years of effort that didn't work. So I would do 5 days of a habit challenge and then abandon it. I would jump into some obscenely complex workout plan. I would try to do 75 hard and I could not get myself to follow through, point blank period. So long story short, I ended up getting a PhD or pursuing a PhD focused on behavior change for other reasons. I was originally gonna study domestic violence and preventing domestic violence. And I realized that everything that I was learning about behavior change, I could actually apply to myself. And not only was it effective and it was working for me, it was completely contrary to everything that I was hearing online and everything I was reading in these sort of like pop psychology self-help books that are filled with misinformation about discipline and willpower and habit formation and all these things. And so after I had that experience, I was like, I have to take all of this amazing information about how to actually change and bring it to the people who need it, who are the people who are struggling to connect. You know, I know what I should be doing, but I can't get myself to actually do it.
Oh, that's perfect. Yes. I mean, so we could probably go down some rabbit holes of the whole public health communication that's been going on for years and the mistrust. But first, I kind of want to get into some of these contradictory things that you've seen, I've read some of these books. I'm not a psychologist or behavior. I had to learn about some of this stuff as a physician. I make funny memes and things like that to try to communicate, but I'd be interested in like the top three contradictory things that are in they're most commonly perpetuated, recycled in some of these psychology books that we read.
The misinformation, the falsehood.
She's got a top three. Yeah. We all got top threes for our specialty. So what's the top?
Three? Yeah. Don't worry. Okay. So there's three that I love to talk about. Number one is the phrase, you don't need motivation. You need discipline.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
And I love to talk about that one because everyone who says that fundamentally has a misunderstanding of what motivation actually is. So motivation, the way we talk about it in pop psychology, is that it's a feeling, like you have that excited, super happy, ready to go feeling. In reality, motivation is a psychological phenomenon. When we behave, when we take action, we are motivated to take that action. So if you're sitting in your room doom scrolling, you're motivated to be doing that. And learning how to assess your own levels of motivation at any given moment and generate or redirect motivation towards goal-oriented action, that is a psychological skill. And when you are good at that psychological skill, you will be able to enact what we like culturally refer to as self-discipline. So the people who are out there saying you don't need discipline or you don't need motivation, you need discipline. If you listen to them talk, they actually say, this morning, I didn't feel like working out. I was really tired. I was really groggy. I wasn't into it. But, and then they'll say something along the lines of like, I thought about the person I am, or I thought about how good I would feel afterwards. What they're doing right there is generating motivation. And we're,
yeah, okay.
We're really like, we're, when we don't talk about that, we miss the part that people can actually learn from, which is how we're motivating ourselves in any given moment to take the action that we need to take.
So you don't need motivation, but you need motivation.
Yeah, you do need motivation. Fundamentally, you need motivation. And learning to...
That's cool.
Learning metamotivational regulation is one of the change skills that you can... That will absolutely alter your life.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll get into how to do that. What's your second one?
Okay. So the second one is don't follow your feelings, follow the plan. That's the second myth that people perpetuate that. And I understand why, same with the motivation thing. I understand why these phrases exist, right? But what that misses or what it discounts is that actually people who are good at following the plan have a high level of awareness and able to regulate their emotions. So they're not always feeling happy. And it's not like when they're feeling sad or angry, they just ignore that. They push it away. They go for the walk while they're mad. They eat a vegetable while they're sad. They feel the feeling. I call this like permission to stomp. Like you have to go to your room, but you have to, you have permission to stomp the whole way there. You have permission to feel whatever feelings you're going to feel as long as you're also following the plan. So that I think is like a little piece of misinformation, or like maybe not even misinformation, but altered phrasing that I would love people to correct so that they can stop shoving down their feelings, because that actually makes it worse. That actually is going to increase the amount of resistance that you're feeling, especially for people who struggle with this kind of stuff. Whereas
like eyed peas, I got a feeling.
Yeah.
So, or, yeah. Okay. So the key would be to regulate that feeling
or
feel it. And okay, understood.
So one of the things that you can do is you can ask yourself, like, what are four feelings that are available to me right now? Four feelings might be, it would be really easy right now for me to feel angry. It would be really easy right now for me to feel sad. It would be really easy right now for me to feel overwhelmed. Okay, great. Can you take the action you want to take from any of those states? Okay, yeah, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to do an absolute rage lift. And it's going to be amazing. That's what's going to get yourself to actually do it, is using the emotion to fuel the behavior, not ignoring the emotion to do the behavior.
I like it. Okay. What's number three?
Okay. And then number three is the misinformation about what a habit actually is.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. This should be.
Yeah.
This is maybe my spiciest one.
Well, I love it.
We like spicy.
Working out is not a habit. It's not. Exercising is not a habit, right?
Okay.
And but the advice that's prescribed is like, make exercise into a habit. And so people go into it and they're like, okay, if I do this, it will become automatic, like a habit is, where I can just sort of do it without any conscious thought. Buckling your seatbelt is a habit. Okay, you can get in your car and buckle your seatbelt without thinking about it.
Yep.
You're never going to find yourself 3 miles into a run and think, oh my gosh, I don't even remember how I got here.
Trail's amazing. Because every day I tell my patients, we got to find a way to make this a habit for you. Dang it.
All right.
I got to recharge everything.
Pieces of exercise can become a bit habitual. So like rolling out of bed and pulling on leggings in the morning, that can become a habit because it is specific. It is contextual. It's a very simple action. It can be neurologically done very automatically. But instead of focusing on like, okay, you're going to make exercise into a habit, before you worry about making it habitual, I would rather you worry about becoming the type of person who chooses exercise, whether it feels automatic or not. Because when you focus on becoming that person, then your exercise habit is actually going to follow you when you're at your in-laws' house, when you're on vacation, when you move, when life gets stressful. The context doesn't change identity-based behaviors. The context will wreck habit-based behaviors. And so I think we need to be focusing way more on identity and way less on habits when it comes to big overarching things like exercise and nutrition behaviors that vary in context every time and will never be truly habitual.
So what's the definition of a habit that makes it not a habit? It has to be kind of subconscious or?
Yeah. So the true neurological definition of a habit is an action that can be taken without conscious thought. It can be taken automatically.
So that's interesting because language does matter to me. And like I literally say, hey, we got to find a way to make this a daily habit. So maybe I need to use the term in my world as routine. Maybe we need to make this part of your routine and work on other things that sort of turn that ease of making the routine some sort of habit forming stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Oh, this is great.
Yeah. And I think that it's important if you're in a conversation with patients too, to stress that exercise may not feel totally automatic. It's not going to feel like this magical thing you just happen to do every day. But the fight that you're having to get yourself to exercise every single time, that is going to get easier. It's going to get easier because you're going to become a person who exercises, not necessarily because it's this like magical.
You just need discipline. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
You need discipline.
Discipline.
Yeah, you just need discipline.
Discipline. Okay. All right.
Did I give you enough to start with?
Yeah, no, Ricky. No, this is really good. Okay. I kind of want to ask some follow-ups about the habit stuff and like some of the common books that you see, like Atomic Habits. I'm sure you probably picked apart that book. James Clear is a nice guy. But I assume there's probably some stuff there that you have. Well, we won't get into that just yet. I want to go back to the motivation discipline thing. So how do we make some more action plans based on that? How do you do that in your only like teasers? So because we want everybody from here to go, I want to look at this body brain alliance thing, but maybe just a few good practical tips.
Yeah. So let's say that you are struggling with motivation. You find yourself unmotivated to do something, right?
Yeah.
Number one is you need to connect to what you are motivated to do in that moment. And that could be anything. So I'm unmotivated to exercise. I am motivated to sit on the couch. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Why? Why are you motivated to sit on the couch? Maybe just because it's easy, right? But maybe there's something a little deeper there, which is like maybe you truly are exhausted. Maybe the couch is warm and cozy and your gym downstairs is cold and frigid and uncomfortable. In that case, the way to get yourself to do the workout might be to go work out in sweats so you can be cozy and do the workout at the same time. So the thing in any given moment that you are motivated to do is going to help you unlock or figure out what you psychologically need. And when you bring in your needs and you sort of hook them or connect them to what you want to be doing, that is like one technique that can really make the magic happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But what about lowering the barrier, shrinking the, like, so for me, for example, I've been doing YouTube videos and it's I always have to make it the easiest thing. I hired a video guy. He's not here all the time. I'm going to have a move here because I need to. But like, I know I'm like, I need to make like a 10-minute YouTube video. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I can do a quick Instagram thing or whatever. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing thinking about it, the motivation to do it.
That's why I'm doing all social media stuff. I feel like so obliged to do it. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to make videos like you and like all these people making millions of dollars on TikTok. I don't know. It's like too much
TikTok.
So let me ask you this. What is your exact process for making a YouTube video?
So I usually have to have a topic that I want to talk about.
Pause there.
Yeah.
So if the first step is brainstorming a topic, what could motivate you to brainstorm a topic? If we just start with that like first bite mentality, like just take the first bite of this task.
To actually – So a lot of the times it's something a patient had said. I'm like, that's a good topic because so many patients ask about it. But to motivate me to think of a topic is to educate my patients so I don't have to repeat myself all the time. But that's the gist.
So in the moment where you're sitting down and you're like, ugh, I really need to make a YouTube video today, it's going to work better if instead of trying to motivate yourself to make a YouTube video, you motivate yourself to write down 10 topic options on a whiteboard.
That's smart. Look at you. You're like a little behavior change specialist.
Wow.
Yeah, I need to get you to move into my clinic for me. And my patients, but for me.
And that one thing I want to mention here, though, really quick, because I think this is really important, is that from a time management perspective, because I teach a lot of stuff about health behaviors, but I also teach about time management, productivity, that kind of stuff. And a lot of people don't understand that the part of your brain that generates ideas and the part of your brain that picks one are different. So if you're trying to do both of those things at once, you're going to get stuck.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what you're trying to do is you really needed to focus on generating topics, and then it's going to be really easy to pick one. But trying to mesh those two things in your brain creates like a barricade.
That's so interesting. You're so smart. This isn't our, we are not, this is not our specialty at all. We're just like,
and yet it's so critically important to everything we do and all that. So this is why, I mean, this gets into healthcare dysfunction. I'm not going to go off that soapbox about how we need to have psychological care in every specialty, but anyways.
It is interesting. So my brother and I have been lifting since we were very young. We have videos on YouTube of us lifting. I was like 7, he's like jacked at fifth grade. And like, I do think about like, I never feel like, well, I do. Some days I feel like, no, I definitely want to go on. But I go in despite any good, bad, or whatever's happening. And I just attribute it to, all right, I'm just going to do this. So how does that fit into your model? Like I'm just.
Yeah. So let's explore that actually. So I want you to imagine like a specific point in time where, so like yesterday, did you lift yesterday?
Yeah.
Did you feel like it?
No, I haven't felt, I don't.
Okay. We're getting you don't old. Like,
we don't feel right? like it ever.
Yeah. But in that moment, when you realized it was time to lift, was there any sort of resistance to it?
Not really. No, okay. I never have resistance to do it. It's just kind of like, no, I don't feel like it, but I'm going to do it. I don't know.
Yeah. So what you've done is you have created essentially the mental habit of not negotiating it.
Right. Okay.
So that is one really interesting thing that happens with especially like people like you two who have been doing something for a long time is that your brain sort of starts to categorize it as a non-negotiable.
Yeah, that's right.
And so then it becomes hard for you to teach how to do that thing because you're like, I don't know how I do it. I just do it. So then the narrative becomes, I just do it. That's discipline.
Yeah.
Right? When in reality, it's years and years and years of rehearsal. And if you don't have years and years and years of rehearsal, I didn't step foot in a gym until I was 23. I had to watch somebody else do a bicep curl to figure out like what the heck I was even doing. Right? So for me, someone who didn't grow up with exercise, I have none of that. So in the moment, I have to figure out how to get past the resistance enough times in a row that then I can establish like this is a non-negotiable, which is possible. It took me 5 years, but it's possible.
Oh, so that's tough. I guess from my perspective, maybe it's a little different. So I think what I do is I find the motivation in exactly what I tell patients, because as much as you know, people might think it's aesthetics or sports. I mean, we're has-beens in that world now, so it's very literally. I'm motivated by the health benefits of it, just like I want my patients to be. And so, and there may even be almost like, you know, some mental dysfunction in there too, because like, I'll get weird if I don't do it. And I maybe have a little bit too much guilt, but I feel so much better. Even if I get 10 minutes on the Stairmaster a day, even though my barrier is really kind of time, you know, obviously clinic time, patient charting time, kids, you know, other stuff going on. But then if I basically force myself, nope, I got to go down, I'm going to do something 10, mm-hmm. 15 minutes, then I will feel better about myself. And it's mostly the health aspect of it, at this point in my life, which is what I want my patients to feel mm-hmm. too. Is that a reasonable motivational thing?
I think what's actually happening here, what's motivating you, is a sense of identity congruence. So when we have a really salient identity, an identity that feels really important to us, that feels really fundamental. So your identity is that you are an exerciser. You want to be acting in alignment with that. Otherwise, you don't feel like yourself. It feels weird. It feels uncomfortable. So you're motivated to release that discomfort by coming back to that behavior. And that's exactly why when I was talking earlier, I think it's important to focus more on the identity piece up front than the habitual piece up front, because we want people to start cultivating what you have, which is that, like, I am a person who exercises. And so actually it feels so weird today to not exercise. And you can actually sort of method act your way into that. So one of the things that I'm creating right now, which is not out and won't be out when this podcast comes out, but I'm going to talk about it anyway, is this like future self immersion challenge, where I'm essentially asking people to identify exactly who their future self is. And future self thinking is a really like evidence-based approach. So you identify who your future self is, that person's values and that person's regular behaviors, and you start acting. You start doing those behaviors and reacting to situations by asking yourself, what would my future self do? So if you aren't a person whose identity is exerciser, you could ask yourself, what would I do today in this moment if I was an exerciser? Okay, well, even though it's raining outside and my 6-mile run can't happen because of lightning or whatever, I would still choose to do 15 minutes of push-ups downstairs, exactly what you said.
That makes sense. I mean, our podcast is called Docs Who Lift. We literally, that's our identity. There we go. That's really cool. Okay. I like it. All right.
And can that translate, you think, to kids too? Because kids, I think, often don't realize what they need to do at the moment to sort of achieve the goals that they may think are important in their adulthood, mm-hmm. ranging from school to sports to health. Again, from our perspective, health is very important, and too many people don't have whatever good routines or habits or whatever they are, as far as those things, and they need to have better motivation to have those healthier routines and somehow improve their habits to make those routines happen, right?
So I will say my expertise kind of stops at like 18 years old. Anything under that, I'm totally, I have a 15-month-old toddler right now, and who knows what her behavior is going to turn out like. But from the little I do know, kids do not necessarily have the part of their brain yet that is responsible for being able to think far into the future, or even like being able to compare past, present, future selves. So it's actually much more important with kids, from what I understand, and again, not an expert in this area, but it's more important to focus on the sort of momentary benefits. So like making exercise fun, enjoyable, and parents can do a lot by making it a regular part of their life and modeling that behavior.
That's great. Very good. All right. Let's see. What else do we want? I kind of want to get into Atomic Habits is very, it's popular. I've met James, seems like a nice guy. What in there? Because it sounds like there might be some misalignment, but differences in the wording than in definitions.
So what's interesting about Atomic Habits is I've read the actual book, and the actual book is very good. The actual book is very much on point. Okay. Lots of great information. The way that people talk about the book and the way the book has been sort of misinterpreted when it hit pop culture, that's where I think the issue is. Because if you look at Atomic Habits, what he is saying in there is actually exactly what I said, which
actually
is
correct. Okay, good.
On like the microscopic initial things that are going to lead to the behaviors you want. So rolling out of bed in the morning and pulling on your workout leggings to make it easier for yourself to do exercise later on. That's the habit itself. Now, there's always going to be in pop culture, people are going to say things like, you know, the habit of exercise, the habit of eating healthy, because habit is now colloquially a term we use to describe a behavior you do often, a behavior you do regularly. The psychological definition of a habit, not the same as the pop culture definition of a habit. Both of them can exist. We just need to make sure that people are educated on the difference.
Perfect. Okay, good, good. I mean, I listen to an audiobook at night. So some of the stuff like, putting on the clothes, making sure those things are kind of aligned, that makes sense. Good. Well, that's good. Sounds like it's...
I have a YouTube video where I review Atomic Habits and I basically say what I just said, and the comments are filled with angry people who are like repeating exactly what I said in the YouTube video. And it's just so funny because I'm like, you people clearly did not read the book and you didn't listen to this video either. You were just mad that you thought.
Right. Well, on social media? I can't believe it.
I know, right?
That sounds good. Okay. So we're into weight loss, obviously. Cardiometabolic health, all that type of stuff. And we like getting our patients to do X, Y, Z. I'm thinking about healthier foods, certain lifting weights is really like the big one. I'm like, how do I get this person to lift some weights? You already kind of alluded to some of these things, aligning yourself with someone and identifying as an exerciser. Like, what are the...
I like the future self thing. I think we need to start incorporating that.
Yeah, so one of the things that future self thinking is really useful for is being able to understand what your appropriate level of challenge is. So when I tell people to think about their future self, I am not asking them to think about, 5 years in the future, 10 years in the future. I'm asking you to think about 3 months from now, maybe 6 months from now, what is one way you want to be a little bit different? And that version of you is still experiencing the obstacles, the circumstances, the environment, the mood swings, whatever that you're experiencing now. All of the challenges are still there. But that person, that version of you, is handling them slightly differently. Okay. And when you ask people to think about 3 months from now, a version of you that's slightly different, they actually inherently start picking behavior changes that are appropriate to where they are. So if you have a person who's never worked out in their entire life, sometimes that person can jump into like a 4 times a week lifting schedule that's at a gym that totally changes up their routine, no problem. Occasionally that can happen. We do see these sort of like flashpoint life changes. Those do happen. But most of the time, what's actually going to be better is focusing on a behavior that is related to exercise. So for example, like going for a 10-minute walk, that they would, if I asked them, what level of confidence on a scale of 1 to 10 do you have that you can do this? They're going to rank it as 8 or higher. And what that's going to do is it's going to build something called self-efficacy, which is your sense of like, I believe that I can do this thing on a regular basis. I believe that I can do this thing in this circumstance. And self-efficacy is the number one predictor of whether someone's intentions become their behaviors. It outperforms every other variable in the literature. Self-efficacy matters the most.
So I talk about self-efficacy when it comes to these medicines, the GLP-1 medicines, where the self-efficacy is low when your hunger and appetite and cravings and thinking about food is so high, to where all of a sudden those are gone and now it's like, oh, I can do this now. Does that track? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so the really interesting thing about self-efficacy is that how you grow self-efficacy is you engage in what's called mastery experiences, which is basically when you take a tiny thing that feels a little bit challenging and you prove to yourself that you can do it. So to talk about GLP-1s, when you are not on a GLP-1 and your hunger levels are through the roof, you are essentially a brand new gymnast attempting like the Simone Biles like quadruple backflip, okay? You're attempting to regulate your eating patterns over and over again in a situation that is really, 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 really freaking hard. if a medication brings down those hunger levels, if it brings down all of this stuff that's biologically driving you towards food in your body, my hypothesis, and again, there's no evidence on this right now, but my hypothesis as someone who understands the human brain and behavior is that all of a sudden you're operating in a lower level of challenge. And so you start having those mastery experiences. You go to a restaurant and you order something that has a little bit more protein in it. You go to grandma's barbecue and you don't overeat for the first time. And that, even if, you know, you talk about how when you're on a GLP-1, the medication is in your body, it might be a lifelong medication for other people. Even if you were to go off a GLP-1, my argument is that those psychological changes, the self-efficacy, that changes forever. Your belief about yourself that you can approach nutrition, fitness, et cetera, differently, that's going to stick, in my opinion.
Love it. That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah.
What other questions do you have for?
I don't know. I think that's great. I think what I'd love is to get some more information on how we can help our patients implement these changes and also more support for us helping the patients to do that and how we can educate them. So I suppose let's talk about how we can get them some information on your program and what to do with them.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Karin Rodine PhD. I put thousands of dollars into free education every single year. So even if you do not have a dollar to spend on this kind of stuff, I literally have over 1,000 videos on Instagram. We have a whole YouTube channel. There's tons of stuff. We have some free resources. I'm not going to even name them right now because I don't even know what we currently have open and not open. But if you go to bodybrainalliance.com, that's my website. You'll find all of my information there. The main thing that you can think about is we have a monthly membership called Change Academy. It's $37 a month. And what we do in that is we teach you the change skills, the 10 fundamental cognitive skills that you need to change your behavior. We teach them to you every single quarter using not only knowledge, but also deep forms of deep practice. So you're given exercises almost like the parallel of a workout program. So you go and you do your strength training, and then that night you log into Change Academy and you do your mental training so you can actually get yourself to do the workout the next day. So that's Change Academy. And then if you want something that's a little bit more intensive, or if you are at the point where you're doing a little bit better on those change skills, but what you find yourself great in some situations, not great in other situations, great with some behaviors, not great with other behaviors, then you might need one-on-one feedback. And so that's what we do we have a whole team of behavior change coaches that can actually work with you one-on-one to help you connect the gap between knowing what to do and actually doing it.
It's awesome.
Very cool. Love it. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody go follow Dr. Karin. I said Karen. She's like, I'm not Karen. It's Karin. I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah, I'm just real jerk.
A real jerk. I ate some jerk tofu the other day. It was pretty good. But I was going to say my brother puts the jerk in the jerk. Dr. Karin Norden. Go follow her.
What's wrong with these guys?
We're gonna put all the stuff in the show notes, all the links. Go get her stuff. I'm gonna hire her to change me to be able to do more YouTube videos.
Listen, we got to talk. I want to help with tons of stuff. And the last thing I'll say is I would love to get in touch with more physicians to see how we at Body Brain Alliance can partner with physicians to bring some of our stuff to the people who need it. My director of coaching, she used to work in the healthcare space, and she actually provided coaching for people who were working with those doctors and clinicians. And so we are kind of set up on our end to have that infrastructure start going. And that, I think, is the next thing for Body Brain Alliance, is partnering with physicians to help their patients actually change the behaviors that they need: medication adherence, exercise, nutrition, all of that kind of stuff.
I'll tell you what, we have a couple of programs, each of us independently, that are very, they're kind of similar, but very different in the way they're implemented. And we would love to be pilot programs for that. I think I'll speak for Spencer. I'm pretty sure we would be. I know I would be my clinic for sure.
Yep. That'd be great. Very cool. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Here's our outro, everyone.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities.
What a disclaimer.